This is John Williams, and Jared Dillian is our guest again, the best-selling financial author. The website is jareddillianmoney.com. Hi, Jared. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
There's a lot of ground to cover with you today. I want to start with something just kind of general and generic. You wrote about it recently, and that is assessing your risk that you have in the market. You say people are putting money in things they got no business putting money in. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, times are pretty good right now. People are taking a lot of risk in Bitcoin. They're taking a lot of risk in stocks. I just want to sort of remind people that, you know, there are times in history when the market does go down. In 2008 to 2009, the market was down 57%. In the Great Depression, it was down 89%. After the dot-com bubble, the NASDAQ was down 80%. So a lot of people say, you know, they think they can take a punch and they think that they can stay invested through these drawdowns. But these sorts of things cause a great deal of emotional turmoil, and you have to really manage your risk. I mean, when you invest, you have to target your risk first and your return second.
So are you saying don't get involved in cryptocurrencies, or just don't put too much in there?
Just don't put too much in there. I actually think that cryptocurrencies might have a role in your portfolio. I mean, especially if you're looking at a portfolio that has some commodities in it, then I would actually consider, you know, Bitcoin to be kind of like a commodity. So that would be part of your portfolio. It shouldn't be 100% of your portfolio or 50% of your portfolio. It should probably be no more than 5.
We were talking about ETFs for Bitcoin this week on another segment here on the Business Lunch. I guess that says something about the long-term nature of that kind of currency, right?
Well, what it says is it's about institutional adoption. And this is the first Bitcoin ETF to be launched. It's not truly a Bitcoin ETF. It's a Bitcoin futures ETF. So it holds a derivative, but it still basically tracks Bitcoin. Now that this has been launched, you're going to see a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, you're going to see perhaps Bitcoin futures being added to commodity indices, being added to commodity ETFs. PIMCO announced that they were going to start a crypto division or a crypto desk. You're going to see more and more institutional adoption. I mean, maybe 10 years from now, Vanguard will have a crypto mutual fund. Who knows?
Yeah, no kidding. And are you convinced, is the world convinced, that this is a safe way to invest money or use value?
Well, the thing with cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin in particular is they're not securities, okay? Stocks and bonds are securities. And what a security is, it's something that gives you cash flows. It gives you dividends or income, and you can value the security based on the cash flows. Cryptocurrencies don't have any cash flows. They're not securities. They're basically valued on whatever somebody else is willing to pay for them. And what that means is that, you know, during a bear market, when the prices are going down, there really is no floor on the valuation. There's no limit to how much they can go down. So far, things have pretty much been up and to the right, but they won't always be that way.
It seems to me like people are interested in this not as a form of currency, but as a kind of roll of the dice, right? I mean, I wonder if there'll come the day where we use this the same way we use our debit card. I think the driving interest in this right now is that it was at 14,000 2 weeks ago, and now it's 64,000.
Yeah, I mean, there's some use cases for Bitcoin. You know, for example, transferring money across the globe is very easy with Bitcoin. It just takes a couple of seconds. If you've ever tried to send an international wire transfer, then that's just a complete nightmare. Also, this new legislation that looks to track transactions in people's bank account, you know, one attractiveness of Bitcoin is that it's secrecy. You know, it's secret and it's private and nobody can track it. And that's one of the uses for it.
Yeah, I'm just worried I'll forget my PIN number and then I'll get locked out of my fortune.
Yeah, that has happened in the past lots of times.
So I've heard. I want to ask you a little bit, two other things that you wrote about. We'll pick it up here in just a minute. We're talking to Jared Dillian. JaredDillianMoney.com's his website. You have a thought about paying off your house in 10 years. And you also were writing this week about where are the workers these days? Jared Dillian's our guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the best-selling financial author. I was intrigued by your piece and some of the numbers you were doing about paying off a home. What are some of the benchmark numbers for people thinking about buying a house, Jared?
Well, I mean, a house is one of those big decisions that you make in your financial lifetime that could really affect how things turn out. If you buy a house that is $100,000 more expensive than you should, you will pay at current interest rates about $70,000 more in interest over the life of the loan. And it, you know, a lot of people try to save money by clipping coupons and not drinking coffee. $70,000 is a lot of money. People don't really realize how much interest they pay when they are paying down their mortgage, and interest is unproductive.
You have a formula, I don't know if it's a formula, but you said that a lot of banks and mortgage lenders will lend people up to 42% of their income for the purchase price of a home. You think it should be more like 25% of the value. The loan should not be more than 25% of your income. Is that right?
That's right. A lot of banks, they'll lend 42% of your income. So if your income is $100,000 a year, they'll say your mortgage payment, your insurance, and your property taxes can be $42,000 a year. Now, if you do that, what happens is that that crowds out any ability to save for retirement. So you need to get your housing costs below 25% of your income. And that's also true if you rent. And that way you have room to save for your retirement.
So I'm just, okay, so let's think about that. Say you make $100,000 a year. The banks will say that they would lend you enough money to buy a house that would take 42% of your income. So, wow, that's a lot. So say it's 42% of your income, which would be $42,000, divided by 12, that's $3,500 a month. If you make $100,000 a year, they will lend you enough money to buy a house whose mortgage payment comes to $3,500 a month. That sounds high. You say if you're making $100,000 a year, your mortgage payments should be more around $2,000 a month, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's on an after-tax basis. That's why that sounds high. So $100,000 of after-tax income.
Okay, fair enough. So then $2,000 a month after I've got $100,000 in my pocket, just for math's sake. And then you say you should be able to, should people be able to pay it off in 10 years?
If you work very hard, you can pay off your mortgage. I mean, let me just put it this way. If you have a $300,000 mortgage and you pay an extra $250 a month, you will take 6 years off the life of the mortgage. You will have it paid off in 24 years. So it actually doesn't take much. You know, I encourage people to contribute a little more in additional principal every month so they pay less interest and reduce the term of the mortgage.
You feel that way even when rates are this low, Jared?
It's really, you know, that's that's the pushback I get, because you say, well, you know, with rates at 3%, if you had that cash and you invested it and you made 8%, so why would you pay down your mortgage? You do that for a reason of safety, because you're reducing your debt, you're reducing the amount of things that can possibly go wrong. And I can tell you that there's nothing better. There's no amount of money that can pay for the satisfaction that you have when you own your house free and clear.
Where are the workers? What's your thought about the fact that we have as many jobs available as we have unemployed workers? Why aren't people taking those jobs?
We actually have more jobs available than unemployed workers. And there's two parts of this. There's the supply of labor. We don't have enough workers. And, you know, the mythology around this is that people simply don't want to work. And sure, there are some people who don't want to work, but that's not all of it. The other part of it is the demand side. The economy has picked up so much speed post-pandemic that we've created these job openings that are going unfilled. If you look at a chart of job openings versus unemployment, like, it's the first time it's crossed over ever in history. We have 10 million job openings and 8.5 million unemployed people.
So what do you draw from that, though? I mean, because here's what people say. These people either have too much cash on the sidelines — too much is not the right way to put it, but they've got cash on the sidelines and they just don't have to go there — or they have been indoctrinated into the feeling that unemployment benefits and the unemployment supplement has made it not appealing to go back to work. What's your take on that?
I think part of that's the child tax credits. I also think that there's some weird psychology going around about the pandemic. You know, most of the country was locked down for, you know, almost a year, and people were at home and kind of got used to being home. And they said, you know what, it's really not worth the trouble of going back to work. I like being at home. And it's been very slow to get people to back to work. And it's just, it's really a matter of psychology.
Yeah. Well, so how do you get around that? Because I thought, well, one way, there seems to be a certain stubbornness out there, like, well, then pay me more. If you pay more, maybe they will come. Do you think that's the way out of this?
You know, I thought that was the way out of it, but I've heard some incredible stories. I heard of a story in New Jersey. A friend of mine was trying to get his house painted, and the contractor was offering $45 an hour to paint a house. $45 an hour is $90,000 a year to paint a house, and he still could not get people.
Okay, so maybe, I mean, that's anecdotal, but suppose that's part of it. Although I do think child care is if you ask me what is the number one thing that's keeping people on the sidelines, I don't know. I'd put child care in the top three, that's for sure. But if it's, I'm still trying to figure out why people aren't going back to work. If it's it's not $20 an hour, I guess. I wonder what it is.
Yeah, it's very strange. I don't have the answer to this question. I talk to a lot of really smart people, and none of the smart people I talk to have the answer to this question. It really is a mystery.
And what do you think of this, Jared? Maybe it's not a mystery at all. It's just slow in coming. People will come back to work. Yeah, they had unemployment supplements for a while. This stuff will get worked out, and I don't know. And we thought it was going to go away in October. It didn't. But maybe by February, people will be back to work. What do you think of that?
I agree with that. I think it'll work itself out over time. And, you know, by the way, we're still in the pandemic. We're still in the pandemic. Maybe the supply chain issues work themselves out over time. Maybe things get back to normal with the pandemic. Maybe in 2024, we're not talking about this anymore.
I hope not. JaredDillianMoney.com is the website for Jared Dillian, best-selling financial author and guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Jared.
Thank you.
Next guest is known as Chef Fab, Larisha Chandler Baker, the chef and owner of Can't Believe It's Not Meat. They opened up a location in Hyde Park, went really well. They opened up a location in Orland Park, went really well. Now they're in the Old Town Gold Coast area. Larisha, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
You prefer Chef Fab, I presume?
Yeah, it's more easier than Larisha.
Although Larisha is a beautiful name, but Chef Fab works too. Let's talk a little bit about the food that you guys started selling in Hyde Park. Just give me the sort of elevator speech about how that came to be.
So what happened was me and my family, we had watched a documentary, like so many, called What the Health. And when we watched that documentary, we were just like, oh, my God, the foods we're consuming. Like, we just have to figure out how we're going to change our life. And we went ahead and we became vegetarian. We said we were going to do it for, like, 30 days. But the problem was I couldn't find a lot of fun Chicago food, like, you know, Italian beef, you know, pizza puffs, fun stuff, burgers. Everything was just, like, mushrooms, quinoa, rice bowls, you know, a lot of carbs, too. So I got in the kitchen. I start coming up with all these dishes. Everyone loved them. You know, I start cooking for my family, and it would be a thing. Everyone would say, wow, I can't believe it. It's not meat. So I'm like, you know, that would be a cool, you know, name if I opened a restaurant. And so many motivated me, like, you should really open the restaurant. And we did it, and the line has been, like, was out the door the first day we opened. I mean, like, blocks long. I was just so shocked. But, you know, everyone is, you know, trying to change their life and eat better just like we were.
So you really were surprised. I mean, in retrospect, yeah, of course there's a huge audience for that. But maybe when you first did this, we didn't know that there would be a huge audience, that there were a lot of people like you who wanted to get off the meat train.
Yeah, because a lot of people were telling me, you know, vegans are strict. They're not going to want this. They're not going to want that, you know. But to my surprise, the vegans, they love what we've created, the fun dishes, the comfort food that you really, really missed. You know, people give a thought that being vegan is just boring, lettuce, and, you know, but we like to have fun with our food, too, just like anyone else, you know?
Well, I understand that, but I think the challenge, at least in principle, would have been, how do I get food that looks and smells and feels, even tastes like the comfort foods I want? I mean, that's got to be the challenge, right?
Yes, but for me, I was already a cooker, and I was already in the kitchen and had so many dishes and recipes. So all I did was substitute anything that was dairy or egg with, you know, things that you can veganize at the grocery store. They have vegan cheese, they have vegan butter, they have vegan egg, vegan meat substitutes. So it's really easy to curate a vegan dish in this day and age.
Yeah, maybe so. I think you're making it sound easier than it must have been. I mean, otherwise somebody else would have done it. What was the, was there a dish that you went, was it the egg rolls? Was there a dish that you went, wow, I'm ahead of the game? What was that moment?
So for us, we have to call it the pizza poof. We can't say pizza puff, but it's in Chicago, everyone loves the pizza puff. And it's like basically a pizza fried in a wrap. And that's never been veganized, you know, so when I did that, it was just like, wow, you know, this is a game changer, a vegan pizza poof. And when we put that, you know, thing in that pizza puff, when people took the first bite out of it, they were just like, oh, my God, you know, you're a genius. Like, and people would come back every day for the pizza poof. Like, literally, one person told me, hey, I've ate this like 4 times a week. That's when we first opened. Now our top seller is our egg rolls, our Philly cheesesteak egg rolls, which are so delicious, which comes with a sweet chili sauce drizzled on top. Those are my favorite right now also.
Was it an Instagram or TikTok influencer who came in there and also helped sort of tip that dish?
Oh, my God. Tabitha Brown. My heart. Tabitha Brown is a vegan influencer, and she's very famous. She has probably over 4 million followers on Instagram. She loves the Philly cheesesteak egg rolls. She ate them. She posted them. The Philly cheesesteak rolls went viral. We had over like 300 tickets in one day just for egg rolls. You know, like, she definitely put a major impact on those Philly cheesesteak egg rolls.
Is she based out of Chicago?
No, she lives in LA, but she was here filming for a show called The Shy, and she often comes back here too. She was just here for the new release of her book.
Wow. So she walks into your place. Did you know she was coming, or was it a surprise?
No, so, yeah, I did. So what happened was, so she's so famous, and I always loved her. So with the help of my audience and the help of Instagram, you know, I put a post and I asked everyone, can we please tag Tabitha Brown and tell her how good our food is, and could she come? So literally, like, we went on her Instagram, and it was flooded. Like, every comment was, you know, go to Can't Believe It's Not Me. Go to Can't Believe It's Not Me. So my audience and my customers, they helped bring her in, and she reached out to us on Instagram, responded to us after, because we sent her a message, and she responded to us, and she was like, you know, I'm here, I'm ready to eat, and we jumped up, and we, you know, made her all of her dishes that she requested, and she loved them all. And every time she comes back now, she comes and eat with us.
Chef Fab's on a phone line, the chef and owner of Can't Believe It's Not Meat. The restaurants were 2. Now they're 3. So you're in the Gold Coast on North Wells, right?
Yes. Our new restaurant just opened on Sunday, 1143 North Wells. And the neighborhood is loving it already. We have so many people that we just opened on Sunday. And we have people like, you know, I've been here every day since you opened. People are just happy to have a good comfort food vegan restaurant in the neighborhood. Because there aren't many, you know, it's very hard to find vegan food, and on top of that, good vegan food.
Define vegan food for me.
So vegan would be no egg, no meat, you know, no dairy. But we also do cater to our vegetarians. Everything that we use in the restaurant is vegan. But if we still have a vegetarian, or what we call a flexitarian, someone that's trying to switch over from eating meat, we do offer a dairy cheese for them. So right now we are a vegetarian and vegan restaurant, but we don't just cater to vegans and vegetarians. Literally, we have people that still eat meat come in and just love our food and tell us that's the best burger they've ever ate. And right now we're just trying to introduce all of this to the Gold Coast Old Town location. 1143 North Wales. I hope everyone is able to come out, taste the food, and love it just like both of the other restaurants.
You know, the Portillo's restaurant started as a hot dog stand. They went public this week, and their valuation is $2 billion. I wonder if somebody's going to come and gobble you up. Have you had overtures?
Yeah, so right now we have like a list of over 200 people that want to franchise with us right now. So, but what I am doing is the Portillo's model right now. You know, Portillo's, it was a family-owned company to maybe just about a few years ago. So maybe I'll do it for a couple decades like Portillo did and then go public and franchise and all the cool stuff that Portillo's is doing now.
You heard it here first. Chef Fabs can't believe it's not meat now on North Wells in the Old Town Gold Coast neighborhood. Hey, congratulations.
Yes,
thanks for joining us. Congratulations and continued success.
Thank you so much. And again, thanks for having me.
That's Chef Fab, as she is known. It's 1244 on WGN. More business news now. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago City Hall has announced a new round of Shy Biz Strong grants. There's $20 million for small businesses and nonprofits, and $2 million specifically for bars and restaurants. The funding will come from the Biden administration's CARES Act. The Shy Biz Strong grant program will disperse grants of between $5,000 and $10,000 to businesses and nonprofits across Chicago that have experienced revenue losses and increases in expenses tied to the pandemic. Governor Pritzker is working with lawmakers on a package of incentives designed to lure the electric vehicle industry to Illinois and keep existing automakers already here happy. Cranes reports the bill could be introduced in the coming days to be considered during the ongoing veto session of the Illinois General Assembly. The package will likely include breaks on payroll taxes and utility taxes and provide job training assistance. The bill's language is still being finalized. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. And in the business of growing your own food, there is frost in the forecast tonight in many areas. If you're going to be covering your still producing veggies and flowers, I will remind you of what our gardening guru, Jim Fazell, had to say just a couple of weeks back. Do not use plastic, only sheets and blankets, cloth type things, that sort of thing. And be sure to take them off again in the morning when it warms up. Meanwhile, it is a Mr. Fizz Friday, and today he's got pumpkins on his mind.
Steve, it is pumpkin time. Actually, it's your last chance right now to get out and get your pumpkins and get to your garden centers and your farmers markets. You know, when we get a question every once in a while, is it a pumpkin or a squash? Standard orange pumpkins are summer squashes, the New England pie or the jack-o'-lantern. Those are the little ones that we carved. Then we have winter squash, which is Cucurbita moschata. They're things like butternut and the commercial pumpkins. Commercial pumpkins don't look anything like the carving pumpkins that we have. There are two kinds. They're called Dixon Field and Buckskin. The Buckskin describes what they look like. They look like a watermelon that's brown. The fact of the matter is this is the commercial pumpkin that goes into the cans of pumpkin that we get and we use for pumpkin pies.
And we are number one in pumpkins, aren't we, Jim?
Yep. The state of Illinois is number one in pumpkin production throughout the country. There are tremendous fields of them down along the Illinois River where that is what they grow. And when people drive through there, they wonder what those crazy brown things are in the field. There's also the painting pumpkins, which are becoming a little bit more popular right now. Painting pumpkins are white, and people paint faces on them and so forth because you have that nice white background.
And those white pumpkins, they make good pies?
Oh, yeah. If you don't carve the pumpkin, if you just paint it, then you can cut it up, and of course, you peel it anyway. That takes the paint off. But, yeah, we've done that a lot of times in the past. It's a little more granular than the Hubbard squash, but it makes good pies. No question about it.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fazell. Chicago Board of Trade's been up and down all week. Right now, corn is up about 7 cents. Beans are down a quarter of a penny, and wheat is trading about 15 cents a bushel higher. From the farm to your belly.
Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't.
It is National Nut Day. Enjoy. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
We're talking a lot about food today on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we will do a little more of that now with Dale Buss, the founder and executive director of the Flyover Coalition, an organization, the flyovercoalition.org. Actually, flyovercoalition.org is the website that spends a lot of time saying, hey, it's not all on the coasts. It's in the Midwest that there are viable business opportunities. And food would be certainly one of those things we ought to be able to capitalize on. Hi, Dale. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Great, John. Thanks a lot for the chance to talk to you about this. Yeah, I mean, all those pumpkins along the Illinois River, I don't think you find that in the East Coast or the West Coast.
You've got a kind of an online seminar, a webinar coming up called Reimagining the Food Business in Flyover Country. So you could click on and watch some of these sessions. What kind of topics are you all going to be talking about?
Well, yeah, basically the idea is, the reason I'm calling it Reimagining the Food Business in Flyover Country is that I think our industry, our food processing and ag industries need to see what it is we need to do to band together to protect and advance these industries, which traditionally have been so important to our livelihoods here, right? And we're not just talking about pumpkins, we're talking about millions of jobs and livelihoods across the region. And kind of what's happened, and I've covered these businesses for 25 years or so for various publications, and what I've noticed is the innovation seems to be coming from the coasts now. So California, for example, has always been strong in agriculture, of course, and specialty crops, fruits and vegetables and all that. But now Silicon Valley, with all sorts of startups, you know, it seems to be taking over the food business as well. And so I'm concerned about Flyover Country and the organization is trying to kind of rally people who have the same point of view around the need to do something about it and for our region to sort of band together and approach this as the challenge and the problem that it is, just as a handful of Midwestern governors, including Governor Pritzker, I believe, recently banded together to promote and launch a charging network for electric vehicles across the region. So this virtual forum, I'm calling it, and you can find out about it at flyovercoalition.org. We have just a stellar list of speakers who are going to be addressing all these various topics, including the governor of Indiana, Eric Holcomb, CEOs of Chicago companies like Julie Smolyansky of Lifeway Foods, Alan Reed of the Chicagoland Food and Beverage Network, and people, you know, really from across the region who all share the viewpoint that we really need to advance and protect this business in Flyover Country so the same thing doesn't happen to food that happened to, say, automobiles.
Well, we're always going to have corn and soybeans out here, but maybe that's
exactly
not diverse enough. I mean, so that's good, but is your point more let's find companies that are going to be making new food products or food additives storage?
Right, exactly. So two areas, I mean, yes, we'll always have corn and soybeans, but we need to, our farmers and ag tech companies need to be advancing, you know, the technology, both in terms of breeding, in terms of sustainable agriculture, in terms of technology like drones and other things that will keep our crop farmers competitive with the world, if, you know, say even with China. The second thing is CPG companies, Kraft Heinz, Conagra, all the others that are based out here, and I've got people from Mondelez and Kellogg speaking at the conference. They need to be competitive, remain ahead of where the technology is in the business. And one of the things we'll be discussing is what these companies are doing to make sure they are. A lot of livelihoods in our region depend on the food and ag businesses. And so this is an attempt to kind of rally people around that concept and how we can keep it all vital.
1 minute left, Dale. Talk to me about what the hot topic is. Is there a part of this webinar that you think is of greatest interest?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a session called Alt Meat Boon or Bane, which I guess as a journalist, I like to put things in headlines. But, I mean, is alt meat, the Beyond Meat, Impossible Meat, and even the lab-processed versions using mushrooms and other stuff to imitate meat, is that a good thing for Flyover Country, or is it kind of a death knell for the, you know, the crops, the livestock, the meat, poultry that we depend on for our livelihoods out here? Or is it a third path that, like, companies like Hormel are taking, where they're obviously huge in meat, but they're also experimenting with plant-based substitutes and kind of keeping their hand in that technology. It's a huge, huge topic. I've got the executive chairman of Beyond Meat, Seth Goldman, is one of the panelists who's going to be talking about that. So it'll definitely be one of the hottest topics at the event.
Dale Buss is the founder and executive director. The Flyover Coalition is where you find more. Flyovercoalition.org. You can sign up there right now. Okay, Dale, good luck to you on that.
Thanks, John.